I'm Eric Wistrow. I'm presenting Telex. So I just want to start out by talking about that we're talking about government internet censorship here. So that's the problem that we're trying to approach. And many governments censor. You are probably all aware of China or perhaps Iran, but countries all over the world do this. And they do this for many different reasons. Some of them are political, some of them for censor pornographic content, and some of them even religious content or gay and lesbian sites. And this is a dynamic and very disputed list of countries. So I don't show this to be the end-all list of these are the countries that censor, but rather to show you that this is a wide problem. So how do these government censors operate? Well, they tend to block websites based on blacklists. There are some exceptions, but most of these tend to find offensive content and they block that explicitly. So offensive content, again, is the political or religious things from before. And the techniques that we've seen them use are things like IP and DNS blacklists, and we've even seen some deep packet inspection techniques where they'll observe things like search keywords and block based on that using TCP reset packets. And there's been some countermeasures against some of this. You've probably heard of many of these, Tor and Freenet and UltraSurf. But some of these weren't designed to be anti-censorship techniques. For example, Tor is an anonymity proxy, which is slightly different. And all of these tend to be at a set of IP addresses or even single IP address proxies. And these IP addresses have to be communicated to the users. But if the censor gets a hold of these IP addresses, then those proxies can be blocked just as easily as the websites that the censor is already blocking. So this leads to a cat and mouse game. So our approach is fundamentally different in that we are operating in a network infrastructure. So we're essentially placing components at ISP routers between the censor's network and unblocked portions of the internet. And we call this technique, because of its sort of as a joke to end-to-end principle, we call it end-to-middle proxying. And so we focus on avoiding detection, and this complements, again, things like Tor, which provide anonymity. And we too use deep packet inspection, much like the censors, but we use it rather to as a form of anti-censorship. And our system has no secrets, so there's nothing that we have to hide from the censor, and the censor can learn our entire system and it will still operate. And we see this as a state-level response to state-level censorship. So. All right, so the threat model that we're talking about, just to be clear, is that there's a client in the censor's network. This could be, the censor could be a country. And the censor controls the entire network. They can block websites, they can change DNS, all of this stuff. But they don't control things outside their network or outside their country. The censor, we assume, blocks according to blacklist, as we said before. So if a user wants to get to this blocked.com, which has some offensive content, the censor will say no and block the connection. But if the user wants to get to notblocked.com, which hosts perhaps some innocuous content like kittens or something, then the censor will say, okay, sure, why not? And finally, we assume that the censor allows HTTPS connections, so encrypted content, to these non-blocked sites. And the censor might do this for many reasons. For example, a lot of e-commerce sites are on there and they don't want to hinder local economies or things like that. And login sites are also moving toward HTTPS. All right, so I'm going to go over a high-level overview of what Telex, how Telex works. So say a user wants to connect to this blocked.com website. And as we said, the censor here is this little wall, and he's blocking this connection because it's prohibited. So instead, what the user is going to do is the user is going to download or obtain a Telex client program. And the user could have gotten this from perhaps a trusted friend or from one of those intermittent proxies that we talked about earlier, such as Tor or Freenet. And this Telex client is going to make a TLS connection to this not blocked website, notblocked.com. And of course, the censor will allow it. However, inside this connection, the client is going to place a special tag. And this tag, which we'll talk about later, is invisible to the sensor. And along this connection's path, there is a telex station. And this telex station is, again, located at a friendly ISP. And this is outside the sensor's country. And so this telex station can observe this connection as it goes by. And inside this telex station, there's a private key. Now, this private key is what allows the telex station to detect this tag. And again, since the sensor does not have this private key, it cannot detect this tag. So the telex station extracts the client's true request from this encrypted connection and forwards it to a local proxy server or something similar to that. And the response from this proxy server from block.com is injected by the telex station back into the original connection between notblock.com and the client. So again, we are using deep packet inspection here, and we're man-in-the-middling a connection, two things that are usually associated with sensors, and we're doing it for anti-censorship. So now I want to talk about the details of this, because that's important. And so let's start with the TLS connection to notblock.com. So the first message in a TLS handshake is a client hello message. And inside a client hello message, there's a random nonce. And this random nonce is 28 bytes. And normally, it's just chosen by random. However, in telex, what the telex client will do is it will replace this nonce with this special tag. Now, if you have the private key, you can distinguish this tag from random, but of course the sensor doesn't, so this tag looks completely random to the sensor, and it cannot be distinguished from a normal TLS connection in that way. And now also during a normal TLS connection, there's a TLS key exchange where the client and the server do something perhaps like a Diffie-Hellman key exchange and establish a shared secret. In a normal TLS key exchange, the client will randomly choose, randomly generate its private key for this key exchange. However, in telex, we instead use a shared secret for key generation, and this shared secret is communicated to the telex station inside the tag. And again, because the station has this private key, it can obtain this these sort of random coins that were used for the key generation. And because it has observed both sides of the connection, it can obtain the TLS master secret that the client and NotBlocked have agreed upon. So this allows it to decrypt the connection and even encrypt and authenticate things to insert into the connection. And so it verifies that it can do this by checking the finished message, which is the final message of the TLS handshake. Which is an encrypted and authenticated hash over all of the previous parameters. And so finally, the telex station, or excuse me, the telex client is going to send the request to this blocked website. Through this connection, the telex station will decrypt it and serve it using its proxy. So how does this tagging work? You're probably somewhat curious at this point. So this turns out to be an application of public key steganography. And what we mean by this is that we want something that anyone, including the client or even the sensor, can generate a tag. So anyone can generate tags, but only the station is able to detect or decrypt these tags. And so our requirements, our additional requirements for this are that these tags have to be short. They have to be small enough to fit inside the 28-byte client hello nonce, and they have to be indistinguishable from random for the sensor without the private key, and they also have to convey this shared secret that we talked about for the key exchange. And finally, we want it to be efficient for us to recognize, both just fast to recognize and also have a low false positive rate. And so the solution that we came across is to do Diffie-Hellman over elliptic curves. Now, there is some challenges associated with making this actually look random, so it turns out that the solution is Diffie-Hellman over elliptic curves with a twist. For those of you who are paying attention and have read the paper, you should be laughing now. And so we implemented a prototype of this, and I want to talk about that now to sort of illustrate our design choices. And So our prototype implementation consists of two parts. We have the Telex station and the Telex client, which runs on the user's computer. And the Telex station consists of three subparts, which are seen here: the flow diversion, tag recognition, and proxy services. And we want to, again, caution people that this is just a prototype. This is not something you should be using if you are in a censored country that may face some kind of jail time or other kind of punishment if you're skirting a censor or something like that. So the flow diversion component is essentially responsible for allowing us to become a man in the middle for this connection. It has to, when commanded to, drop particular flows. And these flows are the flows between client and not blocked that have been detected as being tagged. However, despite any of this dropping, the router here essentially should always forward incoming TLS packets to all of the other Telex components so that we can man in the middle these and serve proxies and whatnot. And likewise, these same Telex components may also inject spoofed packets from either of these endpoints. And so we implemented this in a software router using Linux, IP tables, and IP set for performance. So the tag recognition module is obviously going to look for tags in the TLS connection. However, to do this, it actually has to reconstruct packets at the TCP level, because the sensor may have fragmented packets or something like that. So we have to do this reconstruction. And we chose to use the Bro intrusion detection system because, among other things, it provides this reconstruction out of the box. And we added to Bro some fast elliptic curve code, which can verify or can check 11,000 tags per second on a pretty standard machine on a single core. And so once we find a tag, we have to tell the previous component, the router, to drop this flow. And we explicitly forward packets that belong to this flow until the end of the TLS handshake. And this avoids some nasty race conditions that would otherwise arise if you were trying to block and man in the middle right at the same time. So finally, once it's been once the handshake completes and the client sends the request for this blocked website through the connection, the proxy service takes over. And this is what has to sort of take the data from the TLS connection, decrypt it, and send it to one of many TCP services. So we actually support any TCP service, and we happen to implement these three seen here. So we have an HTTP proxy, which will allow users to access any website at this point. And we have also a Tor bridge. So again, Telex does not provide anonymity. It's an anti-censorship proxy. But we do support Tor. So if you would like anonymity, you can use Tor over Telex. And we also implemented a simple SSH server that only allows connections from Telex. And so this is sort of an alternative to port knocking. And to do this, we actually had to implement a kernel module that briefly just creates a spoofed TCP socket because we didn't actually accept this connection. We're not actually a transparent proxy. We're picking up in the middle of a connection, so we have to be able to create a socket that has arbitrary endpoints and arbitrary sequence and acknowledgement numbers and all these parameters. And then once we get that socket, we can call the normal send and receive functions on it. So finally, this Telex client component is fairly simple. It just has to forward the arbitrary TCP application through this tag TLS connection, so it's responsible for making the tag TLS connections. And we based it off of libevent, which was simplified its design greatly, and also a modified OpenSSL. It's currently available for both Windows and Linux on our website, which I'll get to later. And for the station side, we actually have a test deployment at this point at our lab at the University of Michigan. And there's only two sites behind it. I mean, we're not really a real ISP. But these two sites are notblock.telex.cc, which is supposed to simulate unobjectionable content. And so in our case, that's kittens. And then we also have a block.telex.cc website, which is simulating a censored website. And we did this by only allowing connections to it from Telex. So we had some early experiences with running this system, and three of the authors have been using this for their daily browsing since May. So it's robust enough for that. And we even installed the Telex client on a PlanetLab node in Beijing. And despite YouTube being completely blocked there, we were able to stream high-definition YouTube videos. And then I also got hacked, which was great. So I had an early version of the Telex client running on my laptop, which listened to the public interface and allowed anyone to connect to Telex without having any Telex client software or anything like that. And I was scanned and put on a proxy list. And so we had our first beta testers that didn't know they were beta testers, but they nonetheless used our system and it seemed to work. So this is since July 18th, essentially, we've had this public and allowed people to use it. And these are the locations based on IPs of the users that have downloaded, installed, and used Telex around the world. And again, I want to stress that it's not ready for real-world use because it's easy to detect you're using it because you're going to be sending a lot of traffic to notblock.telex.cc, and also easy to block because they could just block notblock.telex.cc. And then this is just a quick bandwidth graph that we've collected over this past week. And you can see sort of the diurnal pattern that you normally see in web traffic. However, it's not centered around noon our time or US time. This is actually all noon China time. So this is getting a fair bit of usage in China. And where this arrow is, we actually opened it completely to the public so that we don't filter any of the websites, and we allow all websites accessible through Telex. So I want to talk about the security of our system a little bit, just sort of to briefly recap, I suppose. So our goal really is to resist realistic attacks, so realistic passive and realistic active attacks that would deny service to people using Telex on a wide scale. And obviously we'll have to respond in the future. I mean, this is not a done and done system. We'll have to respond to sensors becoming more sophisticated and attacking this type of system. So here are some of the things that a sensor might try. They might try to do some traffic analysis. So they might observe sort of like the round trip times and notice that those change between the TLS handshake and the TLS application data. And we have an idea of using the actual not blocked connection to sort of keep that open and send packets to that to keep the round trip times the same for this sort of thing. So that's just one example of many of these. So we have responses for most of these in either our paper or our website. And I encourage you to talk to us offline if you are interested in any of this stuff. So again, we have to think about how to deploy this system, right? So it's only in our lab right now. It's not a complete system. It's not a production system. So the questions that we want to sort of answer before we can do this is, where do we have to deploy this? So perhaps we have to deploy this system at undersea cables on the non-censoring side of undersea cables. And another related question is, how do we convince internet service providers to deploy this? That's sort of a big question that I think a lot of people have. And some of the reasons that we've kind of come up with are perhaps the government could provide incentives, either tax breaks or monetary incentives, or even private organizations could do this. But also, an ISP could just deploy Telex and then charge users a yearly or monthly fee to use Telex. So very similar to how VPNs do this for their users. And then we also have to see how do we scale Telex this deep packet inspection that we're doing, how can we scale that to core networks if that's a good place for telex? How do we do that? And then finally, we have questions about how to distribute private keys, or if we have multiple telex stations, do we share a private key between them? Do we have different public keys between them? And if it's different private keys between them, then how do we distribute these public keys and make sure that you have the trusted public keys? And yes, we have some of that on our website as well. So just to conclude, I've introduced the concept of end-to-middle proxying with telex, which is our approach to resisting internet censorship. And we're focusing on hiding the use of this service. So it's not anonymity, it's anti-censorship. And we've based it on public key steganography, and we've used deep packet inspection and man in the middle for anti-censorship. And again, we have our proof of concept operating today, and encourage you as researchers to play with it and see how it breaks and how it doesn't break. But again, a wide-scale deployment needs internet service provider or even government cooperation. And so with that, I thank you, and I have quite a bit of time for questions. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, I have one question for you. Well, I have two questions, but I'll pick one. Okay. So my question is not really a technical question, but philosophically, do you think by getting involved at the state level in building a system that's actively, sort of almost offensively, working against other governments, are we opening our own networks up to a greater chance of attack? Are we legitimizing attack on our own networks by doing this?
So you mean like you would encourage an attack on, so you're referencing like cyber war, is that sort of the...
That's exactly. Is if we build this thing to make it easier for people in a totalitarian government to access the network, are they justified in then attacking our network infrastructure?
I don't think this will really do much to change any of that. I think if they already had justification for doing it, they would, you know, they probably already have justification for doing it in their minds. So I don't think that this provides any kind of additional sort of motivation. And in fact, in 2003, the United States has funded proxies for various countries and things like that. And I don't know if that's been continued to today, but certainly that sort of funding could be seen as, like you say, justification already. So.
I have a technical question. How do you deal with routing asymmetry?
Yes. So we do assume that we have symmetric paths on our routes, so that the path going out is the same as the path coming back. However, if we had multiple telex stations on both of these asymmetric paths, it might be possible to do some kind of communication between the two to solve this problem. So that's something for future work. Secondly, if you pick the right place to deploy some of these telex stations, you can probably guarantee that you won't have asymmetric paths. So if you choose, let's say, a choke point for either a website or a particular, even a country or something like that, under C cable or surrounding an entire website, then you won't have to deal with that sort of problem.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, let's thank the author.